Got this. Welcome to the Beyond the Bucket Show, a podcast centered around optimizing all life's buckets. We all have buckets we are balancing: coaching, entrepreneurial ventures, family, passion projects, and health. Let's all take this journey together and become bucket fillers. And here's your host, Chris McSwain.
Welcome back. This is a very, very special episode. I am your host, Chris McSwain, but more importantly, we have the infamous William Bill Murray. Welcome, finally, to the program. I think it's been like 4 years since I tried to get you on, and now you finally come to the program, so I'm happy to have you, brother.
Yeah, I think it was when you started, you're like, hey, we got to get you on, and then we had a couple of dates set, and every time life happens, you had a couple life events, things just happen, and didn't work out, but finally we are here.
Finally, Bill Murray has returned to the podcast. For all you WWE Rock fans, there you go. Well, Bill, why don't you give everybody, first of all, you are the head girls varsity basketball coach at Del Mar. I feel like you've been there for 37 years.
Almost.
And then you are the commissioner of the Blossom Valley Athletic League. And then you are a numbers enthusiast. You can remember numbers very, very well. So
it's a blessing, a cursing.
So tell
blessing
me.
Blessing, a curse.
So you remember every single loss and the number, or every single win and the number. But tell me a fun fact about you that most people would not know.
There's a lot of people that would not know this, even people you think would. For some reason, I just started getting into them probably early college. I like going to like Broadway plays. Mm. People don't think so. And I just like, not necessarily like musicals, but I like the performance, right? I like preferably ones that I know the story, right? Like a Mary Poppins, Of Mice and Men, things like that.
Yeah.
But I do, and people don't believe it.
What is the last Broadway play that you went to go see?
The last one I saw actually on Broadway was Of Mice and Men. This was probably on Broadway, probably 8 years ago. We were back visiting New York, where my dad's from. Mm-hmm. And my dad's not a Broadway guy. He's like, no. So I took my mom and my brother's friends, actually. My brother's friends with Jim Perrick and James Franco, and they were the stars of it. So they actually got us there, and they just said they had tickets waiting for us. So we have no idea where we're going to be. And they actually had my mom and I were front row right in front of them. So it was,
wow,
it was pretty fun.
That's cool.
Yeah. That was the last one I actually went on Broadway. I've been to a few others here. I'll even go check out like the local high school ones. Del Mar puts on some good ones. Bill Burkett does a good job, and they have some fun ones. So I don't know. I just got into it, and I'm like, these are kind of fun. And to me, it's you and I know how much time us coaches and how much time our players put in, yep, to preparing. Those kids that are on that side, it's the same thing. They're there the whole time. We'll be, you know, maybe we're practicing late till 8:30, 9 o'clock, and I'm leaving, and our performing arts center is still on, and they're still in there practicing.
Right.
So I respect that, you know, the time they put in their craft. So,
for sure.
And I can't even imagine what it would be at the professional level on Broadway. So
for sure. You spoke about your brother, who lives on the East Coast, but funny story about, so Bill and I went to high school or the same high school. I don't know. What year did you graduate?
You were a freshman when I was a senior.
Okay. So when you had already graduated, your parents moved to Gilroy, mm-hmm, and your brother decided to have, your parents were out of town, and your parents and your brother decided to house or host a social gathering, if you will. And I was a junior, I believe, and I used to hang out with like all the seniors playing sports, and they kind of kidnapped me and said, you're coming with us up here to this house. And by the way, there's no rides back. So yeah, we're all staying the night at your brother's house or your house. And so the next morning I wake up and you're like standing over me. You're like, dude, what are you doing here? And I was like, I don't know.
I remember opening my bedroom door and you're laying there. I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, we thought, you know, because for those that don't know, between Del Mar High School, I used to live right around the corner from Del Mar, and moving down to Gilroy is a good 45-minute drive.
Yep.
And for kids that are, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19, that's a drive.
That's a drive.
And my brother's like, we're going to have people. I'm like, okay, I'm thinking 25 people. There ain't going to there had to have been pushing 80, 90, 100 people. We're like, how the hell? Cops came twice. Like, they were cool about it, but they came twice. They just said, don't let anybody leave.
All right.
I'm like, okay. But yeah, it was crazy. My one of the funniest stories with that, we'll finish up on this, but we thought we did a great job. All of a couple of my buddies that were there, we were having a poker game out there. What do you got? And we thought we did a great job cleaning up. We went through everything, lifted up cushions, like nothing. I'm not joking, for probably almost a year, my dad would find playing cards in random places in a potted plant.
Wow.
Underneath a sofa. We're just like, I have no idea how they got what. Well, I don't know. And yeah, I mean, it was funny for a while. They just kept finding playing cards, going, what is going on? But
and you still play cards to this day.
I play a lot of cards.
So when we go to a tournament in Vegas, we don't see him until the games. So because he's stuck in the poker room at whatever hotel you want to call, but yeah. And you've entered some tournaments and stuff like that, but this would be a great time to give like a 3-minute backstory on you. And you've been coaching at Del Mar since, I believe, 1999.
Yep. This is
be 25 years.
Just finished 25 years. My 19th is varsity. How I got started was in high school when I graduated, my middle school coaches were the girls coaches at Del Mar now.
Right.
So they said, hey, why don't you come back and help? I said, okay. Was the assistant for a couple years. Varsity guy left. The JV guy moved up. I took over JV for 4 years. Then he left. Then I moved up, and I've been there since. So this was the 19th year as varsity. it kind of got me where I realized that I liked that atmosphere and not just coaching, but so I ended up started teaching there. I taught U.S. history there for a couple years. And then don't really know how. I always knew I wanted to somehow get into the sports field as far as that's what I want to do all day long, right? So throughout my time coaching, I probably two or three times I passed up junior college opportunities. You want to go take that challenge, but something told me not to do it, so I didn't do it. We won't name any names, so we don't burn any bridges
for sure.
But I would say I at the time I probably have regretted one of them, but now looking back, I don't regret it at all, any of it. So from there. During that time while I was coaching and teaching, I also started completion took a little bit. We know how long it takes when you're busy, but I finished my master's in sports management administration.
Yep.
So this was pre-COVID. I started saying, okay, you know what? I think it's time for something different. And so I applied for a lot of assistant athletic director jobs throughout the country because I'm not super tied here. Like I was okay moving. So I applied, I got called back, got a couple interviews for some assistant AD jobs. Not a lot of people know this. One of them down for a D2 down in LA. Again, we won't, don't burn any bridges. And essentially, I was going to be the assistant AD running like the arena, like the facilities.
Yep.
And I had everything, like handshake, everything except signed on the dotted line. And I'm talking a week, 2 weeks before I was supposed to like make the decision. Something just said not to do it. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to do it. So I didn't do it. I had already given up other jobs here. At the time, I was the assistant commissioner for the league.
Right.
So I already given up jobs. So I'm like, okay. So I started substituting for our district just to be able to make ends meet and pay the bills. And then things happened. There were some changes going on with our league. I wasn't connected. I didn't even know what was going on. And I'm back in Ohio, where my mom's from Ohio. So when my mom and dad retired, they sold their house, moved there. Bought a house. And so I was back there. This is November 2019. So right before COVID, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And I get a phone call from a mutual friend, Eric Ostrowski, who's been on the podcast, and said, hey, heads up, this is happening. And you might get a call about taking over as the commissioner for the rest of the year until we find someone. And I'm like, man, I just left. I didn't want to do it. I'm like, I'm trying to do something else.
Right.
And they said, just listen to him. So they call me. It ends up happening. It works out. So the plan was to be the interim for the rest of the year until I found someone, and it kind of fell in where I liked what was going on. They liked it. It was a mutual fit. And now we're going on year five of doing it. And, it's good because it's put my master's at good use. They've allowed me to continue to coach because I told them, I understand the conflict of interest, but they said I've shown over time that, I mean, I'm harder on Del Mar than probably anyone when something does come up, and they, and they're okay with me continuing to coach. And as you know, we're crazy. It's weird coaching, but it's kind of like our outlet. And even though it's a lot of stress, it's kind of where I feel calm. And so you kind of needed that still. And they've been great with it. So, but also throughout that time, thankful to you was what, 2010, 2011, 2012, starting Top Flight and kind of have a whole nother family and another way to keep coaching as well. And took a little hiatus, but we're back doing that. So it's been great.
For sure. No, you touched on a lot. And I want to dive into why we continue to do this after so many years. And but what does your day-to-day look like for the BVAO commissioner? Because when you have a title like that, nobody really knows what you do, but I know that there's work that needs to be done. And there are, you know, 25 some odd sports and however many coaches and how many different programs are involved, freshman, JV, varsity, that sort of thing. What happens with the BVAO commissioner? What do you actually do?
Yeah, so we're the second largest league. So we used to be the largest then when PCAL and Monterey Bay combined. They have 34 schools now. So ours is 26.
26?
Yeah, so we're the second largest. But out of that, it's 26 schools. They all have we offer 22 sports. So they could – most of them have all of them, but – you know, a lot of them might have 18, 19, 20.
Sure.
And so you figure you multiply that by, like you said, two or three levels, coach for each level, an athletic director that oversees all of them, plus, you know, depending on the sport, 10, 15, 20 kids per roster.
Yep.
It's a lot of things to keep track of. So the most people think the overall is, oh, they make schedules. That's like 10% of my job. Schedules are the easiest part for me. That's easy. Once you get a formula set up, it kind of does it on its own. The day-to-day stuff would be a lot of times there's conflict with player ejections, a rules interpretation.
And how often does a player ejection actually occur?
Like depending on the sport?
Like per this basketball season in the BVAL, so how many player ejections were there?
BVAL basketball is not terrible. We have, I would say this year we had four.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Not a ton. Now we had probably four or five coaches that get ejected. Our biggest ones are soccer. It's a lot. I think theirs is a little rough because with soccer, kind of like if you say basketball, how, you know, five fouls, we foul out. At soccer, if they get a second red card, they're out of the game. And by rule, the second red card counts as an ejection, so they have to sit out the next game. So oftentimes, most of the time, CCS does a great job with it too. We'll review it and see, like, you know, basically he had two fouls. They don't need to sit out the next game. It would be the equivalent of our center fouling out and they can't play the next game because they had five fouls.
Sure.
Right? Now if they get two technicals, that's different.
Yeah.
But a red card, two yellows that make a red card in soccer is not necessarily ejection worthy, if that makes sense, but that's the way the rules are for them. So oftentimes we don't make that person sit out. Now if it was some vulgar language, anything like that, like, no, you're sitting. But a lot of times it's like a slide tackle, right? And like they get two of those. Well, that'd be like us fouling twice. So
right. Got it.
Yeah, a lot of that. A lot of connecting people to the right people. We do a lot of things a lot of times with Positive Coaching Alliance and setting up
but we all need that.
Yeah. setting up a lot of intervention, that's a bad word for it, but where they're kind of stepping into a lot of situations as an advocate between things. And we have a lot of good relationships with that. And I actually work pretty close a lot with your guys' commissioner, Jolene Fugate, as well. She's great. So talk to her quite often. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of different stuff. For me, for our league, the busiest times are by far the beginning of every season and the end of every season. The middle part is not so bad outside of like the day-to-day ejections. It's always the beginning, trying to get everybody ready, and the end when we're trying, for us, we have the three different tier divisions, trying to move everybody around, figuring that out. Those are the busiest parts. And then the night or two before CCS playoffs start are insane because we might be waiting. This one score between these two schools might be the reason these two or three teams do or do not get an automatic berth, and we got to wait until the score gets reported. So right. Oftentimes it's late, but those are the busy times. So right now we're just beginning spring. We just entered, even though winter we're in the playoffs, but for league purposes, my winter's done. Outside of, we have our league meetings next week to figure out realignment. But yeah, so it's it can be extremely hectic, but then there's also periods where there's not a whole lot. So
gotcha. Interesting. So everybody, that's what you do if you're a commissioner, not just scheduling, but all the logistics and things like that. And then like trying to communicate to all these people. Obviously, you could do that via email. You can obviously do that via Zoom. How often do you guys get with the athletic directors directly and have communications face to face?
If we're talking all of our athletic directors together, we meet 5 to 6 times a year. If we're talking, and it's in person. If we're talking just interaction with an athletic, I mean, my phone, I have everything on silent because, and I'll check it all the time,
right.
But I don't want to get buzzed every time because I will get nonstop texts and nonstop phone calls all day long from 7 a.m. till, I'm not joking, 10 p.m. And I know if it's after 7, it's probably something pretty important.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it goes a lot. So it's prioritizing things and seeing what needs to be done now, what can be taken care of tomorrow.
Right. So, been a varsity coach for 19 years. You've been coaching for 25 years. And we just both finished our season on the same night, the same time. And I think we both lost by 4. Oh, no, you lose by 10.
We lost by 12.
12. Okay. Yeah. We lost by 4. And this is like, so this is the new territory for us. In my whole 11 seasons, we have always at least made it to a semifinal, yeah, or been in the open every single year. So it's like a weird feeling. I go to a basketball game last night to support our boys program, and then I see one of my former colleagues and boss, Pat Judge, coaching Santa Teresa in the versus Los Gatos, who I've a good relationship with because my best friend and somebody that you know very well coaches on the boys side, but then his wife is the head coach over at Los Gatos. So,
who, you know, by the way, is the 2024 CCS honor coach?
Yes, for, I saw that.
Girls basketball,
that's, yeah, awesome. I don't know anybody who pushed her for that, but maybe they're sitting in this room with me. But that's awesome. And so, you know, there's just so many like just a lot because you know everybody that's in it, and then now you're not in it, and so for the first time it's like, okay, I could just be a fan and go watch games. So
welcome to the territory.
I'm in. So I want to get to that, but like I've never known this yeah, part of being a head coach. It's just a weird feeling, but you know, it's fun to just be a spectator too. But I just wish I was still playing. I wish our team was still playing.
And like you said, people that don't understand or don't know our area very well, there's definitely tiers, right?
Yeah.
And everyone would like to say we play in the same sandbox. We don't. And it just is what it is. And so for you, like you said, you're often into that, at least the semis. And I mean, how many times is this the first time you've missed NorCal?
The first time. Yeah.
So
first time we missed NorCal. You didn't have to rub it in.
I'm sorry. But on the flip side, right, with Del Mar Public School, that we've only won in the entire history of the school since 1959. We've only won 9 CCS playoff games.
Right.
7 of them are from me. Mm. And this is the first time in school history we've ever won 2 in the same season.
Right.
So for us, vice versa, right? Where you're looking at, man, we didn't even get to the semis. For us, we're like, man, we're 1 game away from the semis. Like, right. For us, it was kind of like a great year where just a different level. And our kids, you know, they fought hard. I have 2 great assistants, former players that both coach in top flight, Josephine Vieira and Angie Tulua. And they, for the first time in years, I feel like I can delegate a ton.
Yeah.
And they did almost all of our scouting, especially for the playoff run. And they watched a ton of film. And got through the first 2 rounds. We thought we would. We didn't play great, but we played well enough to get through those 2.
Yep.
And then we honestly probably played our best game against Aptos in the quarterfinals, our lowest turnovers of the year. We put up 63 shots. We shot like crap, made 15 out of 63, but we put up great shots. And you know, they can shoot it. And we were down 2 going into the 4th. So
right.
I told them, I'm like, what more can we ask for? And then even our final game of the year, us and Live Oak are always kind of battling each other. We're tied for the league title last game of the year at Live Oak. We hit a jumper to tie it with 68 seconds left. So you're telling me we had 68 seconds for the league title, and then we were down 2 going into quarterfinal game. So it's, for us, it was an actual good season. For you, you're a little disappointed. For us, but hey, it was a great run.
Yeah, and I don't even know if disappointment would be the word, because our expectations just at the program are like that. You know, so we always want to be in the open, or we want to be a major player in our division as far as being able to win CCS. But we were asking, so we have 1 senior and 1 junior. We were literally asking freshmen to be juniors. We were asking sophomores to be seniors. And so when you look back at it, just for us to even get to the point we were with the seed that we got, I think was pretty amazing, because outside of our league, we only lost three games outside of our league. So when you look at that and going through a tough league schedule, when every team outside of one or two of our teams were all in the open and you competed with them, and you're playing like a SI, it was a 7-possession game the first time we play them, and you look at those things, and our kids never gave up. So when you step back and you get some perspective from it, like, we weren't even supposed to be able to compete at that level, and we did. And so that, I think it was a successful season that we even got to that point. Everybody stuck around. Everybody, you know, never backed down. And so when, you know, obviously as a competitor, you want to win and stuff like that. But just like you were saying, when you look at what happened this year, it was actually a successful thing, even though it may not have been a successful thing for our program as far as like win-loss and advancing to the CCS semis, maybe even the finals, and then obviously NorCal. But you gotta take some inventory after a while and be like, wow, that actually was a success based on the circumstances that we were in.
Well, and like you said, is that this season did give those freshmen who were juniors a ton of great experience, where now they can build on that. Where
Absolutely.
We were kind of in the same spot for the first time. I don't know if I've ever been like this. I'm not making this up. JV varsity, we have zero juniors in the entire program. None. Wow. None, which is weird, right? Good part, no senior night next year, so that'll be great.
Yeah.
But so we relied on, I had four sophomores and a freshman up, all in the rotation.
So you know.
Three of them started, a freshman and two sophomores. And now, granted, our sophomore post is pretty good, but that group, they got great, valuable experience that they're going to use next year. Where and the freshman, she's pretty athletic, and she can definitely grow into it.
Yeah,
and you could see it in her eyes that she was nervous early on, and it almost like you could see it that she was waiting for me to give up on her. And not, I kept starting her. I'm like, no, because you're going to figure it out, and she did. And she actually hit a big three at Aptos that tied the game in the middle of the third. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just those experiences are the ones that they can build off for the next couple of years.
And you got to understand that, you know, sometimes success is not like a linear thing where you do this, you're going to get to that point. And, you know, early on in my career, it seemed very easy. Like, you know, that this is going to happen every single year, either going to be winning CCS in your division or really competing for it, or you're going to be in the open division with one of the top eight teams every single year. So when you have these sort of moments, it just reminds you have to always continue to refocus and build. It's not about what you've already done. It's about what you're going to do next. And like, look at the people that are on this wall behind Michael and Kobe here. Kobe didn't win and you're a Laker fan. It took him 4 years, I believe, Michael Jordan, 8 years until he won his first championship. And then, you know, you got to see, but they didn't win every single year.
Well, I like one of the best stories is people that know better that, you know, like you said, long time ago, but Kobe's rookie year, he was coming off the bench playing 15, 16 minutes a game, but by playoff team, he was playing a ton. And what he do in the playoffs?
All those air balls. Yep.
But he keep everyone, you know, oh, he shot those air. But to him, it drove him like, okay.
Yep.
And I saw an interview with him one time, and he said, my shot wasn't off. It was perfectly straight. It was just short. I knew I got to get my legs better shape. So things like that you can learn from, where even with our younger kids, like, you can see that every game they started picking up something new or figuring out, okay, I need to do this, I need to do that. And I think definitely at every level, but coming from middle school and going right to high school is a big jump. You straight skip the JV jump and you go right to varsity. It's a different intensity, a different speed, a different strength. And it took them a little time to figure that out.
100%.
Once they did, though, we were a little mean on defense.
For sure. No, you guys were solid.
We were in the five foul bonus often.
Really?
Well, when we're not the best, really good athletes, but not the best basketball players, we have to be great athletes and a little feisty.
Yeah.
And I told them, when the new rule changed this year, some of our head refs, Scott Calvin, and they said, yeah, it's going to be great. Like, it'll, you know, the game's going to clean up. I'm like, no, it's not. Now I know my sixth foul in the first quarter,
the game starts over. The game has cleaned up, actually, because we were hardly ever in the bonus.
It cleaned up in terms of not having the bonus, but as far as physicality, I told my team to get tougher. I'm like, we're six fouls the first quarter, whatever. In a minute, it starts back over.
Right.
So let's just go be aggressive. Because for us, I did see you guys a few times. You're kind of like us where it's not, you're not 10 deep where, no. I felt I was about six or seven. And, so to be able to hang in there where I didn't really mind if a couple got fouls, because realistically my 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 weren't that big of a difference. So, it was like, okay, we'll just put the next one in. And it let everyone know, like, if you play solid defense, you play tough, there's no such thing as 50-50.
Yeah.
It's 90-10.
Yeah.
Dive all over the place. You'll play a little bit.
Yeah. You know? Basketball coaches, why you were talking, because we are the eternal optimist, but we are also the most pessimistic as well. Like, you can't find any area of life that is so optimistic. Oh, if we do this, if we do this, if we do this, but then you're so worried about this. It's just a funny line that basketball coaches, because we're just looking for any opportunity. Like, all right, let's just say you would lose by 20. Guys, that was only 10 possessions. You guys know that, right? We were right there with them. You know, the second time we played SI, we lost by 20 points exactly. You know, that was 10 possessions. 10 possessions. And how many games come to 10 possessions or under? Most of them. Because if it's over 10 possessions, then they were just going to be better than you anyway. But
so,
a lot of them are so far under 10 possessions. And that's why we get so frantic. And that's why we're on the sideline and jumping. Because you know every single one of those possessions is so valuable.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I'm an avid podcast watcher of Beyond the Buckets. Yes. Is it six possessions?
Six. Yeah.
And when I started telling that to my assistants and I explained it to my team, the six possessions that really can alter the game, my team started charting just when they take notes, their own six possessions. Like, hey, this one mattered, this one. And they realized how many times it really is six or seven possessions that change it.
It really does.
Change it.
And if you look at all the scores in these playoff games, yours was six and under, ours was two. Santa Teresa LG game was one overtime on the boys' side. Even the Christopher and Pioneer game was five possessions. Or if you're talking about
last night?
Yeah.
So I was doing the book.
Okay.
It was not five. It ended up being 10.
Okay.
It was 2-3 points until the last.
And then they got a foul. Yeah. And so, yeah. So the six possession rule, for those that haven't listened before, is basically most of the games that you play that you can win are going to be 12 points or under. And if you're 12 points or under, that means it's really close to a 50-50 game. And so if you can be six possessions better than your opponents, you know, how are we going to do that? Are we going to, and it's basketball is advantage, disadvantage all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So it's can our defense turn you over so we can get the advantage? Can our offense create this advantage, whether what type of play are we running or who we put the ball in, as far as who's going to be controlling the ball most of the time, stuff like that. How can you get advantage? Can we get an advantage on the 3-point line? Can we get an advantage on the free throw line? Can we get advantage on not fouling or getting their team into foul trouble? So you're trying to get these micro skills to a point where hopefully you're going to be six possessions better than the other team, because you know, it's a small number, but it's still statistically significant if you win by 12 points. If you won every game by 12 points, well, at the end of the year, your plus minus is going to be through the charts.
For instance, like you said, trying to find that advantage, right? So earlier in the year, our post player who's pretty good, she attracts a lot of attention.
Yep.
We're at our first tournament of the year. This is our second, third, and fourth game. In a 3-day stretch, she has 26 points getting double teamed. The next day, 33 points getting double teamed. The next day, 18 points getting triple teamed. Great, right? She's having a great time. But I'm looking at my coaches going, we're about to see a whole ton of zone and box and ones, because they're not going to, until everyone else starts shooting.
Right.
And we were not the best outside shooters. So we worked and worked and worked on we might have made a three a game, one or two, because we were just focused on her. It kind of changed our mindset, and we just sat on the gun, shot a ton. By the end of the year, we were hitting 4 and 5 every game, where we knew those are the shots that are going to be open. We're going to have to knock these down.
Right.
And like you said, you're just trying to find that advantage. Okay, what is ours? Not necessarily get the ball to our post, but we can kind of dictate where the defense is going to be, because they're also worried about her. So we knew, all right, we're going to have these little runners. We're going to have the baseline. We're just going to have to get better at it, right? And I think that's, like you said, the stuff, the pessimistic optimistic that keeps us all nuts.
But. Right. Yeah. And sometimes you can't control, like the shot could be perfectly a really good shot and it goes a half inch to the right and then it's going to rim out, or the bank three, which happens quite often in our game. That happens. It just happens. And sometimes it's just not going to be your night. It's not going to be your year, and you have to live with that. And that's the, I think that's the hardest part for coaching. And my wife brought this up to me the other day. She's like, you know, you guys as coaches are so, like, you guys are control freaks because you are crafting and putting together this plan that if you execute this plan effectively, it's going to work. And there is a plan and there's a path to beat every single team. I firmly believe that. Now, if you deviate, if one of those puzzle pieces is off, like if you're playing a juggernaut, which we played multiple times.
Do we have a juggernaut out here?
Well, yes, we do. But if you play that, like, you have to play a exact perfect game. You have to have every single piece. You can't misplace this piece, because if you misplace this piece, it's not actually going to, you're just not going to, you can't finish the whole puzzle without this piece. And if you're missing several pieces, well, obviously there's a big leak there, and that's not going to happen. But we are so controlling when it comes to this dynamic of putting people in positions, and we're relying on kids that are 14 to 18 years old to be able to execute that at a high level. And for some, and for most of them, it's just not doable. It's not doable for them to execute what we actually need them to do in order for them to do that. But guess what? Here's the thing about that is it's okay if they can't do it, as long as they're trying and they're learning because of that. And we as coaches need to understand that. Like, we gave them the best opportunity. We gave them the best scout. It just, they might not be able to accomplish that. Yep. And that's okay. As long as we put our best foot forward. But, you know, in every other aspect, if you just said, I'm a day trader and I'm going to study this thing, I'm going to do da, 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 like, you can be pretty successful if you just study the charts and study the market. Now, you never know if there's something, you know, outside factors that are coming in, but most of the time you can be pretty consistent. And, yeah, and basketball is one of those fields that you don't have a whole lot of control once that ball goes up.
You can be very consistent until you're not. And it happens quick.
Very quickly.
I mean, you know, not to keep bringing it up with both of us, but when we got knocked out, we played great the whole time, but we played great for three quarters. We were getting the shots we wanted. And then the fourth quarter come and it was like a lid and nothing went in. You're like, well, there went that.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're still getting the exact same shots. There wasn't any major adjustment. Just they weren't going in now. Like, oh, okay.
And what I really like about basketball is it is a conduit to real life, because if you can go through those struggles and you fail and you still keep getting back up, well, when something really hard comes into your life, you are now able to be in a place where, look, I've been through a lot of difficult things and now I can get through this one thing. For me specifically, this basketball season was different because this is the first time that I didn't have my mom around the whole year. And so, like, I actually got emotional at the end because I was telling the kids, hey, thank your parents, you know, make sure. And then I thought about it. I was like, oh no, like, this is the first time my mom isn't there to be there for me when we had a tough loss. And I was like, whoa. And I had to, like, slow down. And I just let my assistants finish the post-game talk, because I wasn't ready for that moment, because I just got real busy throughout the whole season. I stayed busy. And one of the things for ending the season so early, it was like, oh, I'm not busy anymore. Yeah. What am I going to do? What am I going to think about? Because everything I was thinking about was only towards this one goal of trying to get these young kids over this hump. So without that game, of without doing hard things all year or my whole life, it would have been a lot harder to manage that situation. And I think I'm doing, like, great in the grand scheme of things, because I had that team. I had the opportunity to be there every single day and show them some strength. And one of the young ladies that we brought up, she came and told me, she's like, I had my father die a few years ago and I had no clue. And I just sat with her and we talked after the game. And it was like a beautiful moment because I was vulnerable enough to share that with the team. Yep. She was vulnerable enough to share that with me. And now, like, that to me was worth every part of the hurt and the heartache of not continuing on with the season.
Yeah, I think another knowing you and your family too, is that having a good person by your side, and which, by the way, she had a fantastic high school basketball.
She played
coach.
Basketball for Coach Bill Murray.
but you know, that definitely helped, and it was. You can tell that. I don't know how to describe it, but the distraction of basketball came at the right time when it needed to.
For sure.
And now it's kind of time to process, right? And,
for sure.
And it's I mean, I think this was the first time too with just the way the season ended, where like you say, we both ended on the same day. I think this is the first time I didn't make it to one of your playoff games.
For sure.
Because I was playing, and then we both lost the same day. And it, like you said, just a little different this year.
Yeah.
So, but I'm looking forward to going to the next few rounds, and I'll probably make it up to Sacramento for the state.
For sure.
If anybody's in the area of Sacramento and haven't done it, it's fun to watch up there and watch just the kids on an NBA floor and just watch them go crazy. And there's a good chance we'll have a few friends that might be refereeing as well.
Yep.
So
that's what I really like about our community here. We know so many, like you go to a game, you meet 50 to 100 people that you know. Hey. I go to a game last night, and my son's like, "Dude, Dad, you know everybody." And I'm like, he's like, "You're friends with everybody." He's like, it was just so amazing to me. But you take that for granted sometimes. Yeah. About the community. You know all the officials, you know all the coaches, you know a lot of the players because you see them grow up, and they might play club for you or somebody else in the area. And it's an amazing community, this basketball community, that I don't want coaches out there to really take this for granted, because it's so cool. Like that has been one thing that I've really enjoyed, is just actually going to the game and being a fan of the game, seeing what the other coaches are doing. Yeah. I love like watching the demeanor of the other coaches. One coach is serious. One coach is, more like a Pete Carroll type of rah-rah type, or, this officiating crew versus this officiating crew. What are they calling in these moments? I think you can take a lot of good nuggets for your own self, and as you move on and you think about what you're going to do different next year.
Just because I'm on this thought process, thinking of officials, we have good ones, but we get on them, right? When you leave our area, you appreciate our officials so much more.
Yeah, for sure.
Both my playoff games, the last two, first one was at home, but the second and third were not our association. I'm like, do these guys ever like get taught anything? Like, what is going on?
Right.
We're not going to bring anything up, but it was our second game. We won, but it's a 2-possession game. We're up 4 with 1:10 left. We got called for a 5-second closely guarded while dribbling. I'm like, that's not in girls.
Right.
And then he had me question. I'm like, dang, did they change the rule?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and it'd be different. We're up 10, big deal, whatever. Yeah. We're up 4 with 1:10 left. And my point guard is one of the few smart IQ kids.
Good.
And we talked, and I told her, run the whole 30. We'll make it a 1-possession clock with 2 possessions that were up. And then they get the ball. And I'm like, what? Wait a second. And we won't go into detail, but we'll say that officials that we do know let that guy know he was wrong.
Right.
After the fact. And he tried to still say we were holding it. And then we sent the video to him.
Right. That's one thing that I like about Mark and Scott.
Yeah.
And Scott, I saw you last night. I invited you on the podcast. So hopefully it doesn't take you as long as Bill.
It only took 4 years. That's not that hard. 4 years ain't bad.
But when you do send something in, they'll tell you if they're right or wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, like, you're going to get frustrated in the moment if you're the coach.
They're human, and
the call goes against you. But after you say what you need to say, walk away. It's really not that serious. At the end of the day, we're dealing with high school basketball players, and you know, a lot of times we take it overboard, but we really need to just fall back, especially like just move on from it a little bit sooner. Like, let's not hold on to it. Like, I held on to it for that night. We lost, and now I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, what else? Like, what are you going to boo-hoo about?
Well, I was good about that one because we ended up winning. If we would have lost, it would have been a little different.
Well, but I'm talking about on Tuesday.
Tuesday, I felt okay. I felt like we gave our best effort outside and not knocking down shots. Like, we played hard. And I said, we're down 2 going into the fourth to a 3 seed. We're the 11, right? So they're supposed to beat us. And the thing, we definitely had our kids playing loose because we told them, they beat you, nobody's shocked. But if we beat them... So we were playing loose on house money,
right?
But you're always second guessing, like, what could he have done different? And then the next morning I watched the tape. I'm like, you know what? Like you said, just didn't go our way. We played really well. Like, hey, that's the way we'll do it. We 17 win season, getting two in the playoffs, first time in school history, which is crazy for how long the school's been around.
Right.
They got to the playoffs ton, even before I was coaching, tons, just never could get through two rounds.
Yeah.
Just to be able to do that, I'm like, hey, that's a success. That's a successful year. This team, these kids, we had six seniors, four sophomores and a freshman, not going to hang out together all the time. And they just started to grow together. They liked being around each other, which is huge. People that don't think that's huge, and it's specifically in girls basketball, it's huge. And they weren't done playing with each other. I've seen multiple teams the last few weeks in person here in the playoffs that have been knocked out. You can tell they're all done with each other. And when the team's not done with each other mentally, they fight a little bit harder. They want to stay together a little bit longer. And, you know, that's fun to have, because I've definitely had doing it long enough, you get teams on both sides where everybody's kind of done with each other. And that was not the case. Like, we wanted to keep on playing.
Talk to me about the balance. First of all, I don't think there's balance in life. I don't think there's balance really in coaching. As far as how hard do you push to get them to where they were, like, they can and need to go as far as winning basketball games, but also understanding that this is what we do is bigger than just coach, like, winning basketball games. We're trying to develop young people. And if we just sat back and said, how do we develop young people? How are we going to handle them as far as pushing them to achieve greatness, but also not losing them to make them hate the surrounding situation and what it actually takes to be great? And I think the last thing I'll say before I let you answer is, first of all, you don't really know how far you can go until somebody else really stretches you to get to that point. That's why everybody has coaches or everybody has an inner circle to try to stretch them to get to somewhere they haven't gotten to. The hard part, especially these days, is when you try to push to that uncomfort level, there is a lot of pushback and because they're unsure of the reasoning why we do this or how to do it. So how far do we push? This is coming from two coaches that have really changed their coaching style over the years and changed their demeanor, changed their sideline etiquette, changed language to hopefully give kids a good experience. But can you do both? And how have you been able to manage that push-pull with high level of achievement versus, you know, the personal and, you know, personal development for a kid?
So there's a lot there. There's a couple of things too that you brought up that are funny, because there was just you talking right now brought a few points that I remember that you learn from coaches as you go on, right? Where one of the things you said, you know, how far can you push a kid? How far can you push a kid? You're only gonna be able to push them as far as they want to be able to be pushed anyway, right? Like, some of them, it's different now. Like you said, you have to, the demeanor's different, the way you approach people is different. I would say it's definitely changed over the past 5-6 years for sure, but it probably started about 10 years ago where, for lack of a better term, people just expect things to be given and not, and you got to earn it, right? No matter what you want in life, because newsflash, life isn't fair and it's going to be tough and you're going to have to earn everything you get.
Right.
And so it's kind of dealing that, right? As far as coaching wise, we emphasize most of our practices are all about fundamentals and then a little bit of tempo, because we might not have lifelong basketball players, so we may have good athletes. So we'll just try to outrun you, right? And so as far as tempo-wise, we push them there, right? Now, as we got throughout the year, we slowed down a little bit, especially playoffs. It was more game prep, stuff like that. But by that point, we kind of know who we can push and who we can't, right? And I've learned some things from coaches, a couple longtime coaches that you know both, that one is no longer with us, but Creighton Lane, he had a great thing when someone asked him, when they, you know, he's getting questioned as a coach and the players, and he had his team all around and he told them, you always ask, why do you need coaches? You know it all. So why do you need coaches? And he said, I want you right now to stand up and reach as high as you possibly can. Kids are all reaching up super high, right? Super, both hands reaching high. And he goes, now stand on your toes. And he goes, that's why you need a coach. Someone that can push you just a little bit more. You thought that's as high as you could reach, right? Something as simple as that. And I'm like, you know what? That actually makes sense, where you don't know how far you can get pushed until you get pushed. And then the other one that has changed mine, because like you said, you've noticed me over the last 15 years for sure. I have changed my demeanor a lot, mostly because you just have to. Yeah. But one of the biggest influences is one of your former, I guess, counterparts is Wade Nakamura. Used to be at Presentation, now the boys at Monta Vista.
Yep.
Because he made us look calm back in the, like he was hard and he was on kids.
Right.
And could fire. He's just fiery and passionate and wants to win. And he changed a freaking 180 in a year. And I'm like, what happened to you? And he told me he went through a couple of things with it was like a pilot program that Positive Coaching Alliance put on. And it was, nobody really knew what was going on. It was about maybe five coaches. And the two biggest points that he's taught me that I keep all the time, and I tell young coaches all the time. Number one, be a tank filler, not a tank drainer, right? And because I know 15, 20 years ago, I was a tank drainer. Like I just expected you to do it. I'm going to be hard on you. And now I'm so much more of a tank filler, right? It might be tough love still, but it's definitely love and like the pats on the back and like, hey, we did this. Let's look at this. Just being the tank filler, not the tank drainer. And the second one he said, and this one I really have pushed the last couple of years, give them something more to remember than just basketball. And that can be, like you said, life lessons. That can be team bonding, all kinds of stuff. So we make sure, like our first, the week before our first game, the Thanksgiving week, we took the kids all paintballing outdoors. I have a buddy that his family runs paintball down in Hollister, and it was fun. We're running around. Now they got 11 kids, 11 girls, and the four coaches. Oh, and I didn't mention him earlier. Shout out to John Davis. My JV coach does a great job.
Nice.
And the girls wanted to go 4-on-11. We're like, it's 4-on-11. I'm like, okay, whatever. And I mean, they beat the crap out of us. They had 11 of them. They're coming all after us all over the place. But it was fun, right? But it's those kind of memories outside of basketball that they remember, right? And I've heard you many times on this talk about it's the memories that they get. They're not going to remember the wins and losses. They're going to remember the little things, right? Right. And it's stuff like that, that once I got that in my head, and actually, here's a funny point, too. Another one of our mutual friends, Josh Legod, former coach at Branham. So he was at my first playoff game. And we're not playing great. This was just, you know, a week and a half ago. We're winning, but we're not playing great. It's an emotional game. So to set it up, I've coached a family of Tongans, the Tuluas. And one of them is my assistant coach now and her younger sister.
The third one?
Yeah. And the youngest sister is a senior this year. We end up playing Seaside in the first round, who their two cousins are on the team, Tuluas. So the whole gym is Tongan. It's fun. They're a great family, great atmosphere, but it's loud, right?
Yeah.
And there's no way we want to lose it to their cousins. So we're a little fiery. We're up 5 at half, and you know I'm feeling like we should be up a little bit more. And as we're walking to – as a matter of fact, I think I still have it in my pocket. Mm. Hold on real quick. I think I do. As we walk to the locker room, I do have it. As we walk to the locker room, Josh hands me this. What does that say, Chris?
Wow. Remember to be a tank filler. You can't see it on camera, but wow.
So he hands that to me as we walk to the locker room. I already had this in my head, not necessarily a filler, but I wasn't going to jump on him because it's not like they weren't trying. We just weren't playing well. But my assistants, one of them was getting a little fiery, and I'm like, we cannot go in there like that because they're going to shut down. And we didn't. We were definitely positive in tank filler, and we end up pulling away and winning by 14. But stuff like that, right? And only because I've talked about that with Josh, he knew that phrase would remind me, right? And I mean, it's literally subtle, it's just a slip as I was walking through the gate. And it's just little things like that, that, like you said, our basketball community we built, that we've helped each other, right? Do you know how many times, I don't even know if you know you do, how many times we're at AAU somewhere, and either you, Giles, someone will come by and you just whisper something. And I'm like, ooh, and it changes my demeanor the way we did it. Like little stuff like that, that when we know people close enough that we can do that, we know we're not going to offend them. You know what I mean? Right. You know, a lot of coaches like, don't talk to me. Not us. Like, we know each other. And you guys do it a lot. So when Josh did that, I was like, you know what?
That's amazing. That's like a really good story. And you need people like that to be able to, and that's coaching in a certain respect. He's seen you for so many years. Yeah. He knows who you are. Coached with you
he was coaching me.
Yeah. And you needed that in that moment because it could have went the other way, and you need people in your life to tell you the harsh truth. Yeah. And that's what we need to be able to sometimes tell everybody now. And this is what I say. I've always said this. You might not like what I have to say, mm-hmm. but you need to hear it.
Yeah.
And you know, and my grandmother is one of those people, and, you know, she's 93 years old, but when I was going through a hard time, she was like, basically, no, you need to snap out of it.
Yeah.
And change your mindset. Look what you do have. Yeah. Look what you still have. That was a big puzzle piece, but it ain't the whole puzzle.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's what we have to continually remind ourselves, especially when we're in the moment, because when you get in that moment, and there's nothing like being on that sideline and on a Friday night in a league game or a playoff game or NorCal game or whatever, there's nothing like it. The adrenaline rush, the atmosphere is just amazing, amazing feeling. But it's like a drug and it's like a high. You have to understand that it is only for that moment. And if you can be more like I thought about the Niners losing the Super Bowl. I thought about that a lot after we lost our game. Which one is more important? Probably the Super Bowl. It was on the biggest stage. Everybody in our country, everybody across the world was watching this moment. And for Kyle Shanahan in particular, it's been a rough go in the last two Super Bowls with the Niners, the Super Bowl with when he was with Atlanta calling the plays. He's had a rough go of it, but he handled himself with so much class and grace. And he understands that this is just a moment in time. He got questioned over and over, and he was very transparent. We wanted the ball third. This is the reason why, and this is what we believe. And just because it didn't work out doesn't mean it changes the belief. Would he go back and change it? I don't know. Because what if his defense turns him over and mm-hmm. they stop him? They win the game. Yeah. And then if you're Mahomes, and that's why you always have to spin it. Like Mahomes, there was this clip of Mahomes saying, oh, they want the ball first, knowing that, okay, well, even if they score a touchdown, if we want to go for two, we can win the game. Mm-hmm. So you have to always spin it. And if you're in that segment, you have to change your mindset. You have to get out of that mindset instantly. Like, dang, we lost the game. Like, what? And nobody even thought, like, we're Niner fans, but we didn't think about it too much after the game.
Yeah.
He's only one, and the whole organization have to live in that.
You know who did think about it quite a bit after the game?
Who's that?
Ryan Cooper would not stop talking about it.
Yeah.
Ryan, relax. I think for like the 2 days after, he was just depressed.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing. We don't like, why would that have any bearing on anything that happens in our life? It really doesn't. And same thing with these games. Like we lost the basketball game. Yeah. There's so many more important things that go into play
other than
the basketball game.
Every time we lose a big game, which over 25 years, you lose a lot of them. And like you said, you remember those way more than you do the wins.
Yeah.
A lesson, sure, that my mom has always told me, and she always says it, and she'll still say it. She'll probably end up watching this and saying, I told you. So those of you that don't know, my mom was born in Ohio, country bumpkin, sweet, cares for everyone, wants everyone to be fine and taken care of.
Excellent woman.
My dad was a Marine from the Bronx, New York, who if you... there's one thing you're going to do, and you're going to go hard at everything you do. Otherwise, why do it? And so when people understand that about me, they understand the dynamics, right? But one thing that my mom always says is, whatever situation you're in, what is the worst thing that could happen? And in that case, the worst thing was, we lose, our season's over. Can you live with it? That was always the follow-up question. Can you live with it? It might suck, but can you live with it? And when you see that perspective, like, yeah, you can. And realizing that, in this instance, right, it was still a great season and all that. It's like, yeah, just move on to the next, you know?
Right.
Because like you said, there's bigger things in life. There's other things going on. And you take the necessary time to reflect on it and move on.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
And kind of like we tell our kids, the next play.
Yeah, for sure. And that's when you said that about your mom, like the worst thing that could ever happen to me in my life was losing my mom at the time. And can I live with it? I can. And you can still thrive and you can help other people through their situation. I believe that we go through these situations to help other people get through them.
Yep.
And if you do that, that's, you know, the circle of life, and your experience has helped you, like Josh giving you that. That's one of the best stories I've heard. I've ever heard. Him giving you that paper.
I thought it was ironic that I still had it in my, but I remember, like, you know what? I think it's in my pocket right now.
And, you know, back in the day, that brings me, like, people holding you accountable. Like, Giles held me accountable when I was coaching at Del Mar. I was the head JV and he was the assistant. We had switched roles, and I was just on this kid, and you know the kid, and I was just on him, and there was no reason for me to be on him like that, just berating him and telling him what he wasn't and stuff like that. He said, "Chris, that's not you." He's just like that. He's like, "That's not you." And I saw the kid like a few years after at Jamba Juice right over here. And he looked at me and I looked at him, and we both knew, and that moment both crossed our minds for sure. No doubt. He still said hello and stuff like that. "Oh, how are you doing?" But he knew and I knew. And from that day, I never ever wanted to be like that, mm-hmm. because like you were saying, and I want hard coaching. I want my kids to be coached hard. I don't want my kids to go through life where it's just like, "Oh, it's so easy." No, F that, man. We need to, no. It's okay. It's okay. I want you guys to do hard stuff. I want things to be difficult. Like my son, every single league that he's been in, his team has won. I can't wait till he loses. He lost one. He's lost one game, and that was like the most devastating game. And then I'd never seen him work so hard. We were in that backyard every single day, and it was number 10 on the Celtics. We were the Lakers, and we came back and we won that championship, or his team won the championship. I'm saying we, like I did it. I never seen him work so hard. And the same thing right now, we're in flag football. We got the playoffs coming up, but we beat this other team and they're good. They're just as good as us, but we happen to beat them like twice, and we're going to see him in 2 weeks. And I'm interested to see how it all plays out, because I want some sort of failure in his life early on, so you can understand how to get over it and move past it, and know that it doesn't define you. This is what it is. And sometimes, guess what? You're going to see somebody that's just better. And there's always somebody better. There's always somebody better. Always. You can be the best in your profession, but there's somebody that's better.
I've been saying it, so now all of my assistants pick it up, but I've always told teams that I've coached that there's a major difference between getting beat and losing. Those are two different things. Getting beat, you played your butt off. You did everything you possibly could. They just played a little better and they beat you.
Yep.
Losing, you didn't do what you're supposed to do and you lost. Like, there's two different distinctions, right? And when you figure that out between the two, losing doesn't really get any easier, but it's easier to accept the getting beat, right? Where if someone beats you, right? Which happens. Just lost my train of thought.
And it's okay. You don't have to win every day either, but you got to win more than you lose. Yeah. If it's 51%, you won more than you lost. If it's 60%, you won a lot more than you lost. And most of the time, like, you know, just like look at the records in CCS outside of even some of the open teams, mm-hmm. like our boys basketball team is sub 500 in the CCS championship game in Division II.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's
a little different animal though with the West Catholic.
That is different. That for sure is different. And most of
Look at on the girls' side, Presentation was your last team that was getting blown out by all of you guys.
Right.
And I know girls that are on that team getting beat pretty good.
Yep.
They took the one seed of D3 single digits into the fourth quarter. Yep. It's like that's just, and I saw them preseason to now, different team. That you go through 6 weeks, 8 weeks of the West Catholic, you are battle tested. Doesn't matter which team.
And you said it with a sandbox, but I'll say it like an ocean. We're all in the same ocean, just a different boat.
Yeah.
And the boats are much different for our league in particular than in everybody else. And like you said, sometimes life isn't fair. Is it fair that we have open enrollment and kids can come up? But it's also not fair that our tuition is $33,000 to attend the school. And a lot of people, there's a barrier for entry to get to those points. And is there financial aid for people that qualify? Absolutely. But there's just levels to it all. But I think that there's, and even so, like even the upper echelon teams in the league are way different. Look at the Reardon boys.
Yeah.
Like that is a college basketball team. They are incredible. doesn't mean that they can't be beat. They've lost a couple games, and other private schools have competed with them. And who knows? We'll see what happens tonight in the championship game.
I went and watched in between games for us. I went up and saw Los Gatos play Priory. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a 5:30 game. It was a 7:00. So before that, 5:00, mutual friend Allie was reffing the Mitty game, Mitty Reardon. So Josh was actually with me. So we went and stopped by Mitty Reardon just for half to watch. And I'm watching Reardon first time in person this year. They're good. They're athletic. They're good. They're quick, right? They play hard. And they're down 50-17 at halftime. They would destroy every public school down here.
Right.
And they're down. That, within your own ocean, you have a bunch of sharks and you got a freaking whale.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's just a different animal.
For sure.
But I wanted to touch on something that came up a minute ago. We were talking about how you didn't want any player to ever feel like that again, right?
Yep.
But it also is converse too, where there's players that you know you've touched and helped through stuff that comes back.
Oh, for sure.
I had this year. Now, it might have been two things happened this year. One, we were winning, which always helps. Two, my freshman I had on varsity, she's way better at Instagram posting than any of us. So we gave her our Instagram. And I mean, she was on it all the time. And so we just got so many returning players. I had players that played for me before you went to Del Mar. Or it was same time. Remember Maria Acuna and that kind of group that was with like Morgan and Justine and all them?
Like Ashley Mitchell and
yeah.
all
them. Yep. So she came to a game. I had, I probably had.
Oh, that's the game. I did see her at her game. She was at the tournament.
Yeah. And I probably 4 dozen players came back to a game this year, like all varying ages from in their 30s to maybe they just graduated 2 years ago, right? Come back to games that I haven't seen for a while just to come watch a game, just to see how it was. Our home playoff game against CSAD. You want to know who's sitting right behind me? Tom and Kathy Mullett.
Wow.
That they came down, who people were like, who the heck is that? But former player who now coaches in college, and then her brother went to Del Mar and still lives in the area. But they were here and saw we were playing, and they lived 3 hours away. And they came just to stay and watch a game, and it was fun just to see them.
And that's what it's all about. That is exactly what it's all about.
Just all those connections. So that's the fun part, is seeing all the connections. And, you know, as I've gotten older, so have all of them. So now there's more and more, you know, ex-players that are coming by.
Yeah.
But
my whole staff is all alumni from Valley Christian, and they all played basketball there. Yeah.
So my two assistants on varsity both played for me, both played in college, and both go up to coach with Top Flight. And having them back, I have been a control freak at times, and I just want, you know, you just want things done the way you want it. And I don't leave a lot. All of my family, my brother, my mom, they're all on the East Coast now. So it's hard for me to leave during holidays because of basketball.
Sure.
This year, I left for Thanksgiving for a week. They ran. We're talking right before our first game.
I'm glad you did leave. That's good. That's awesome.
Yeah. They ran practices, and we were 100% ready for the first game. And like I told you, this year, they did so much scouting and pretty much exactly what I've done. So
yeah,
having those people, like you said, that you trust and that you know they're back there, it's pretty huge. So I appreciate it. And hopefully we keep them around for a while.
Well, it allows you more peace.
Yep.
Because you don't have to think about everything. Like I don't call the offense anymore. Eschoff calls it all. Yep. And if you know me, I love calling offense. It's really what I love to do. But he's just as good as me, if not better. We all think that we're the best at whatever it is, but why would we not give him some ownership of it? And I'll just take the defense, and it's made me a better defensive coach. But him calling the plays allows me to just kind of watch, and he does all the subs too. He does all the subs. I don't have to do any of the subs, which also gives a little bit of a barrier too, because now the players can't be upset with you.
Yeah.
Let it, like, Eschoff is the one controlling who goes in the game or not. Yeah. Now I give him my, like, hey, I think we need to, if I need somebody to go in, I'll say, hey, we need to get so-and-so in the game. But you know, given that ownership, I think is very huge, and having great assistance is essential.
There was my mom watches, she loves basketball. She actually was out here for 2 weeks, the last four games of the season before the playoffs, but she watches everything on NFHS, all the streaming.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we're talking, if it's a 7 p.m. game, it's 10 p.m. out there. And my mom's in her 60s and like, that's a long night. And she stays up and watches them all. She loves it. And she even waits for me to call, see how she thought.
Yep.
Mom, I love my mom. My mom don't know nothing about basketball, but she still gets her points in. But some of the things she pointed out this year was she loves, and I didn't even notice until I went back and watched the tape. During timeouts, I'll be talking to a player. Josephine takes one. Angie takes one. And I know, I can tell by their demeanor, we're all talking about three different things. And I completely trust that they're saying the right thing.
Right.
And it's great to watch. Usually it's Josephine talking to our posts about, you know, she's overplaying you, make this move, spin this way. Angie's usually the on-ball defender talking about do this, right? And then usually I got my point guard because, you know, head coach, quarterback, we got to be on the same page. So,
for sure.
And it's fun where 15 years ago, for sure, I would have been like, what did you say? What? Now I'm like, eh, whatever. And to understand that, like you said, great assistance, and I know they're saying the right thing.
What are some things that we as coaches can get rid of and not do? Like there's so many unnecessary things that we probably do that we can just probably get rid of.
Get rid of our responsibility or get rid of it in general?
Just in general.
Coaching?
Yeah. And while you're thinking about it, I'll tell you some of the things that...
I'll tell you this one that I actually picked up from one of your league mates, Sue Phillips at Mitty.
Yeah.
I've gone to a few of her practices and I just love watching. I've seen your practices. I just love practices. You take notes. And things that they do at practice, not that different from what we do. The sure. difference is the tempo right. and the pace. And if it's supposed to be a 6-minute drill, she doesn't care. If it's 6 minutes, if 4 of the 12 got it, she moves on. And when I started to do that, not necessarily the pace, because we got a lot of kids that need to, you know, we need to learn it. But if we don't get it, we move on. We started getting so much more done at practice because, okay, clearly this isn't going to get for everybody, but it's your job to learn it, right? We can't slow down everybody else. And when I started doing that, it changed. That was probably about right before COVID. Changed a lot of things.
Yep.
So you can always pick up stuff.
We don't get water breaks. You can get water anytime you want.
I took that from you. Yeah. The water bottles at the end of the baseline.
Yep.
Get them whenever you want. Just obviously not in the middle of the drill if you're in it, but when you need it, go get it. Same thing. Sped up practice.
It's plenty of breaks because let's just say you did that, you know, water break 4 times throughout a 2-hour practice. All right. And it's you say it's 2 minutes, but it's really 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you're basically taking, you know, close to 20 minutes on these water breaks mm-hmm. per practice.
Do you remember a handful of years ago when I was at your practice and I saw you yeah. do that I asked why? And I started doing it immediately.
Well, it was a football thing.
It's great.
From Chip Kelly.
You really do get one or two more things.
I think I was reading a book or something like that where he ran his offenses. So he had ones versus twos over here, twos versus ones over here. So defensive ones versus offensive twos. defensive twos versus mm-hmm. offensive ones. And so, all right, I call this play. You're listening, okay? 22 trap, go, blah, blah, blah. You guys go. And so while they're coming back, this next play is going. And it keeps going back and forth. And that's how you're able – because that's all Kobe did was, you know, the 6-6-6 workout, mm-hmm. 6 hours a day for 6 months, blah, 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 6 days a week. So, you know, if he got his first workout at 4 a.m., you know, 4 to 6, then he'd come home, deal with the kids, take them wherever they need to get to. He'd have another workout scheduled, you know, 10 to 12, eat lunch, and then he would do another one, 2 to 4. And then he'd have his whole evenings, 4 to, you know, 8 o'clock, whenever he goes to sleep, hang out with the kids. Well, you're defining the math, because if you only did, let's just say you did half of that, you did 3 hours. Well, I'm doubling the output of whatever it is that mm-hmm. you already did, just because I got up at 3:30 to start working out at 4. And that's really what it is.
Are you saying if you put in more effort and you work harder,
it doesn't guarantee the result, but it gives you a better opportunity to achieve mm-hmm. it. Just like I'm not even joking. I probably watch more film than anybody. The reason is look behind you.
Yeah.
Cause I put it on right here while I'm working mm-hmm. out. I work out and I'm watching it, or I jump on the Peloton and I'm watching it. So I get a workout in plus the film. So even if I watch yep. another 30 minutes of film, if you only watched your hour of film that day, yep. I've already got 30 more. I've got already got 50%
Speaking of which, watching the film.
Yeah.
NFHS huddle. How much easier is it now?
Oh, it's great.
Oh my goodness.
It's great.
I don't even remember. I mean, I do, but I don't even remember 15 plus years ago. We didn't have huddle.
I don't really
want to have NFHS.
I don't know if I should say this, but I'm not the one doing it. But one of my former parents, their daughter graduated. He is able to pull the NFHS video and add it to our huddle. So he added like every single game I just said, hey, can you add these games? He's like, already on it. Like, he's so invested still in the program, and I love it. Like you said, you have these relationships with these families that go so long. Well,
you know what I just found out this year? I mean, I knew it, but so a lot of people use Huddle instead, and they stream through Huddle, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I don't know if you know this. So I go on because there's a team in my league that didn't put their film anywhere. I'm like, I know this thing's out there. So I found it on Huddle, the Huddle Live. It's called Huddle Fan, right?
Yeah.
And it, you know, I log in, it says I have to put in buy a subscription. I'm like, our actual Huddle subscriptions count. It uses it. So I go on there, I started watching way more games. I was yes. Your Huddle subscription works for it.
It's for the Huddle Fan.
For the Huddle Fan. And you can watch all the streams and all the live.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I don't know if they know it, so hopefully they didn't watch this. But
yeah, well, I mean, we have a lot of listeners, but not that many.
That's a good perk. So keep that for us. Keep that. Don't be charging us more.
Oh, but Jules and I were talking about this. We were talking about stuff like, I was asking you about stuff that coaches can get rid of, but pregame stuff. When you go to the, when somebody comes to your gym, oh, coach, we got water here. The trainer's here. You know where your room's at. Mm-hmm. Let me know if you need anything. Like, why do we even say that anymore when we've seen the same coaches for every single year? Like, that makes no sense. Why do we even do that?
Yep.
And the same thing with like the ref talks. Why even do them anymore, especially when you know the coaches?
Not to mention, you and I have been doing it a long time. Are your pregame referee talks? This is what mine is now. All right, Bill.
You got any questions?
Floor 30. All right.
Like, and they probably don't even need to tell us that.
I know. Like, what was the point of that?
Like, especially if you know us, but if you don't know us, then I mean, I guess they're supposed to do it, but
yeah.
I don't know. It just seems weird. It's almost like you go to greet your cousin in a formal manner. Yeah. Like, no, what are we doing here?
Yeah, yeah, no, it's I mean, honestly, even when I think to the few playoff games out of the area that of our two down Greenfield referees and then the two we had at Santa Cruz, I knew one of the four. And all of them were relatively semi-informal, right? Where it was kind of a quick little thing. And they just assumed at that point, you know what's going on, right? And like you said, things that we can get rid of. Now, I don't mind having those part, right? Because that's kind of the fun stuff and still, you know, fist bumping each other. But there's a lot of things that protocol that has always just been there and people just do it. Like how many times now? We definitely both have, you have coaches that for one reason or another, you might not be on the best of terms with, but for the most part, it could be someone you're really close with, someone that you're just go against all the time. And it's always the handshake and it's always the hand on the arm, right, or the back almost every time. I just think things like that are kind of funny to see. I don't know. I'm weird. I love, like last night I was doing the book for the Christopher Pioneer. I love watching the interactions of the players and coaches because you can kind of tell demeanor of the winning or losing side, whether they're satisfied or not. And you can tell who likes each other or not, like coaches wise and players just by watching. It's kind of fun to watch. I always wait to see what happens.
We're not going to say any names, of course, but are there coaches out there that you dislike?
Are there coaches that I dislike? Yes. Yeah.
And yes. What would the reasons be?
Some were the one that drives me the craziest, the worst, because I've been on both ends of the spectrum. I've had the teams that were getting beat by 30, and I've been the team winning by 30, right? And I'm a big believer in always respecting and not disrespecting anyone. Like, they're out there, regardless of the level, they're out there trying. Those kids are playing just like you. They go to practice just like you, right? And so I don't like when there's coaches that have a demeanor of they knew they were going to win, and there's always, you know how it is at the end of that game, there's always an excuse for why it was closer than it was or why something didn't happen. Like, come on, man. Like, they're high school kids. Just like you said.
Or I had so-and-so out.
Yeah. Who cares?
Somebody was out sick.
How many times? I hear that once or twice a year. I'm like, whatever.
It doesn't matter.
No, nope.
I don't think there's any coaches that I dislike. Or
there's a couple.
There's a couple that I.
No, I don't know about you.
Yeah. I don't really. Yeah. Nobody. If you treat me poorly, I'm like, it doesn't really bother me. If you disrespect our team, that would probably give me, you know, some reasoning.
So we won't say any names, but we did that. We had that happen this year for our team. And through people, we had a mutual friend, right? And it got back to us that the reason why they beat us, or the reason why we beat them the first time, they knew what they could do. This is what we need to do. And we stopped so-and-so because everyone else can't do anything. Well, that guy, I didn't even bring it up because it was through a player, and it got back to my team. So my team found out. So those players that couldn't do anything, that can't shoot, hit five threes in the first quarter. We were up 35-5 at halftime. Just kind of like, eh. Right? Like,
yeah.
Maybe you should just keep your mouth shut every now and then.
But. No, that's for sure. Yeah, and I mean, it's really not that serious to have a rift with somebody unless they, you know, if they're blatantly doing something or saying something.
Well, and even now with social media, right? Like I hear stuff all the time, especially league commissioner even. I'll get stuff from people saying, you see what this team is posting? I'm like, okay, so, you know, if you really have an issue, have the two athletic directors talk about it. Like, hey, let's wipe this off. Stuff like that where when we were playing, you never, what? We never had any smack talk on social media. We didn't have it.
Yep.
We were having pager code. I talked about that the other day with someone. You remember that pager code?
Yeah. Pager codes were, you had your number at the end so they would know it was you. But it's very similar to like catfishing now. You could use somebody else's code if you knew it.
That's true. Good point.
But the technology has obviously changed. And that's one thing that I think we as coaches need to do is change with it. You know, our coaches thought we were soft. We think that our players are soft. The next generation is going to think that the players are soft. It just always like that. So you just have to find a common ground and try to meet them where they're at and get them over the hump and not like make any excuses. Oh, this generation like that has always been the case. Yeah. It has always been the case no matter what. So I think we're like hour 20.
Are we really? Oh yeah. My goodness.
What is there anything else that on the top of your mind? We touched on a lot of subjects, but
no, just that I think for coaches that not even coaches, just anybody. I've been watching these since, especially during COVID, we're all sitting at home forever, and you've just done a great job with these and bringing different guests that have different backgrounds, different perspectives, and it's not always about basketball or sports, and it's been great, and I appreciate the time you put in that. Sorry it took so long to get here, but we finally did it.
It happened when it was supposed to.
Yeah. And, you know, I just appreciate everything that anybody from former players to people who've given me a chance to my assistant coaches to you guys through Top Flight, everyone that contributes to everything and are in it for the right reason to help kids not necessarily even achieve things they want in basketball, just achieve things, period. Right. And to have maybe just a little bit of an edge on the next person. Right. And that's, I think that's what it's about, and just giving them some good things to build on. And I appreciate, like I said, you and everything that everyone's connected that kind of bring that. And I look forward to keep doing it. And we were just talking about how season ended and move on. We have freaking tryouts this weekend. I'm like, man, there are just no days off.
None. And I would say the same thing for you. Like, you're an inspiration. I looked up to you for a long time, just the way you handle your business. You're so detailed. So like everything is quality that you've done, into the longevity that you had at one place. I think that, that in itself is an achievement because you have had opportunities to go to other places or, go to maybe a quote-unquote higher level, but you have remained consistent in these kids' lives, and people like the kids that you're coaching need you. And you know, I think that you don't get appreciated for what it is you do for the basketball community. You don't just care about your team. You care about everybody else's. You are a true basketball junkie in the purest form, where you will drive wherever to go watch games and interact with people. And, you know, there's not a person, the only thing negative that anybody's ever said is you talk a lot, but
I think my team would say the same thing.
That's not necessarily a bad thing, because your heart is in the right place. And, and you really are one of those people that everybody loves genuinely. And there's not really a bad word other than those two coaches that don't like you and you don't like them. But man, I'm thankful to have you on. I'm thankful to call you a friend and a brother, somebody that that is not only a colleague but somebody I also look up to. So thank you.
I appreciate
for that. Before we let you out, who should come on the show? First of all, all the guests now, if you are a return guest or you are the first time guest, I've asked you to give me somebody to come on the show. We need you guys to follow through with some of these guest requests. So who should come on the show? Somebody that hasn't been on, and it could be in person or online. Who should come on?
Unfortunately, a lot of the crowd that we're all around, right? The coaches, you've had almost all of them. Like, cause I would have definitely said, you know, Wade or Sarah or, but you've had them all. Right. Give me a minute, but
the in-person ones are way better.
Yeah.
The conversation goes so quickly and it's fun. The online ones aren't bad.
You know what I miss? But your first couple, like the first season. All right. You're having a dinner table. You bring three people. Who do you bring?
That's true. I did five.
The fives. Yes. Yeah, I remember that.
But there's a lot of other podcasts that utilize that now. Yeah. So it was, and I like these better where it's just before all just the inside peek to whatever it is, that when we first started, it was like, I outlined all the questions and I sent them out to people. And like when you came in today, you're like, oh, we're really not prepared at all. No, we don't prepare anything. And I think that's left for the best organic conversations. And now I really feel that I can have a conversation with anybody.
So I've got one now. Okay. I just thought about it. I'm pretty sure you have not ever had her on. Heather Ridley, the former coach at Christopher, Heather Stewart.
Okay.
Have you had her on?
No, I haven't.
Let's get Heather on, because Heather's not coaching now. She just travels. Her both of her daughters play D1 sports.
Yep.
So she travels and watches them.
Her older sister, or her oldest daughter, went to Valley.
Yeah. So she is a basketball resource and a knowledge, and she's got some good stories. She would be fun. I actually just saw her last night at the Christopher game, but she's someone that has helped me a ton. I've leaned on, and because she has some good experiences too, and she could add some stuff. And she worked for Positive Coaching Alliance.
Right.
I believe she worked for BOSI, Bay Area Women's Sports Initiative. So she probably has some good insights. Right when we're done, I'll text her right now and say she's getting on it.
Sounds good. All right. You know what else is really good? This outro.
Thank you for listening to the Beyond the Buckets podcast. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and share the show with your friends. And until next time, take care.